Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with Episode 58 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling A Conversation with Aaron Carter, WSU Winter Wheat Breeder. I drove the 90 miles from Spokane to Pullman in December to speak with Carter in his Johnson Hall office. Carter has been WSU Winter Wheat Breeder since 2009. He is the protege of former spring wheat breeder Kim Kidwell, working in her breeding program as he pursued his PhD in plant breeding. I have a picture of Carter on the day he was announced as the new winter wheat breeder at a Spillman Farm field day. He was a boyish-looking young man then, and almost 9 years later, he's still a boyish-looking young man. Only now, he has two boys and two girls of his own. A photo from the day of my recent interview and the day his appointment was announced have been posted on our Facebook page. Search for Washington Grain Commission. I was impressed last February 2017 when I heard Carter put on a falling numbers seminar during a panel discussion held in conjunction with Farm Forum. I thought at the time that he would make an excellent teacher. Judge for yourself. Go back and listen to episode 13, Falling Numbers 102. You can access earlier episodes on the WGC website, wagrains.org. That's wagrains.org. Carter likes teaching, and we talked about the tension between teaching and research during our interview, but that was a segment that ended up on the cutting room floor, even though I'm turning this conversation with Carter into a two-parter. Although Carter is not a farm kid, he is a small-town kid. I asked him to tell me a little bit about his background.
So I grew up mainly in a little town outside of Twin Falls, Idaho, called Kimberly. That's where I did most of my elementary and junior high and high school. And I've got four sisters. I'm stuck right in the middle of them, so two older and two younger. I'm married and I have four kids, two boys and two girls. And they're just boy, girl, about 2 years apart in age from each other, so keeps me busy.
What kind of kid were you there in Kimberly, Idaho?
I was just one of those, kind of inquisitive kids. I always liked science, so I was the one always trying to figure out how things worked and, just kind of a laid-back kid. Pretty easygoing, I think.
And what is an unknown talent of Aaron Carter?
Oh, I don't know.
You're not a good checker player. You don't sing in your spare time. You,
no, I don't. I wiggle my ears. that's it.
I understand that a '69 Corvette Stingray played a role in you becoming a plant breeder. How did that occur?
Yeah, so my high school ag teacher had a '69 Stingray that he would let his favorite senior take to prom. So as I was getting into high school, I figured, well, I better get on his good side if I'm going to take it to prom. So I started taking ag classes. Up to that point, had only really been focusing in on sciences. So the science kind of melded in with the plant side of things. And so I really got interested in plants and how plants worked. And, I did some internships with different companies around and kind of saw plant breeding as a way to combine the science that I loved and the plants that I loved into one career.
And were you the teacher's favorite, and did you take the Corvette to prom?
Yes, that's always the part of the story I leave out. Yeah, apparently I fell in love with plants more than I did with the car at the end. But yeah, I did get to take the Corvette to prom.
It's very fascinating to think that you might not be a plant breeder were it not for a '69 Corvette.
Right. I mean, that's what got me into it. I credit a lot to other mentors and my ag teacher letting me explore a lot and kind of giving me free rein on the ag side of things.
As I understand, you were down two technicians in 2016. In an era of private companies hiring more university graduates, how difficult is it to fill the technician positions? And are you fully staffed now?
I am what you consider fully staffed. And being able to fill those positions, I don't think was necessarily as much as of competition between private companies where, they were hiring people away from us or it was difficult to recruit people in. A lot of that was trying to find the person that best fit into our program, worked, with the other staff members, and kind of integrate it into our process that we have. You know, yeah, we're in competition with private companies and other universities hiring people, you know, and so we're all vying for the best person, wanting to keep the best people around and trying to do all we can to do that. And a lot of times when we see people leave, you know, there's personal reasons involved and that as well. So, you know, we're pretty competitive as a unit as well.
How many technicians do you have and what do they do?
So I have two field technicians that pretty much manage all of our planting and harvesting, all the field component. We have one technician that works in our molecular lab that runs a lot of our DNA markers, helps with some, you know, phenotype screening as well. We've got a technician in the greenhouse that manages all of our plants coming through the greenhouse in our crossing. We have a technician that does our double haploid production. And, you know, she works closely with both our lab and greenhouse technician. And then we have a funded technician in the end-use quality lab as well. So, you know, it's kind of those six that work. But, of course, the end-use quality technician doesn't just run my program material, but runs spring wheats and some other groups material as well.
Now, this is sort of a silly question, but who is more important to breeding varieties, you or your technicians?
Yeah, I couldn't put one over the other. We each have different roles, and those roles are complementary. I mean, there's no way one person could manage a breeding program the size that we have. I can't go do it all by myself. So, you know, it's really we work together. We talk about different things, you know, look at different technologies we want to use, figure out together how to implement that. And then, again, we all have our specific roles within the program where, again, you know, if one person wasn't there, then our whole breeding system wouldn't be possible.
So what is your role exactly?
You know, a lot of my role, you know, I make a lot of the final decisions on varieties to keep, varieties to advance forward, what varieties are, you know, need to go to variety release or be considered for variety release, which ones just aren't making the cut and need to be removed. So it's kind of more of that, you know, big picture, looking at all the data we have across multiple years, doing those different analyses to see, you know, because you've got 50, 60 different traits that you're looking at, and lines aren't superior in every trait. So you're kind of balancing that. I can give a little bit here, but I'm gaining it in these other traits. And so just kind of balancing all that together. You know, so that's kind of my role in part in the breeding program, like say, giving it that vision, new technology we're going to use, you know, what DNA markers we're going to run, how many crosses we're going to make, what crosses we're going to make, you know, and then also, you know, the research side of it, being able to find competitive money to do the research that, it, you know, expands our program's capacity, you know, and then that supervisory role, you know, making sure everybody's getting paid, making sure everybody has the funds and the equipment and the people that they need to do their job as well.
I'm just curious. I mean, certainly as an undergraduate and a graduate student, you must have made your share of crosses. When was the last time you made an actual cross?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to make an actual cross, it was probably only a couple of years ago, but it was probably just one day. You know, my technician probably took a day off or something and needed someone to fill in. So yeah, a lot of those duties, you know, driving the combines, running the markers, making the crosses. Yeah, those are duties that are assigned to my technicians. So yeah, I don't do a lot of that anymore, and they do that. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of my focus now is on kind of the big picture, the direction of the programs, where I go, and I really rely on them to do a lot of that day-to-day work of, again, planting, harvesting, marker work, crossing. And, you know, we'll meet often, we talk about the process, and it's kind of this back and forth where they tell me, you know, these things are going well, these need improved on, you know, and we talk back and forth about how the process is going and where we can improve it.
Of all the things that you do, what is the most gratifying?
Really, it's the plant breeding side of it, being able to release new varieties and, you know, watching farmers adopt those new varieties and knowing that those new varieties are leading to more sustainable systems, leading to higher economic returns. You know, that's really the satisfying part of it and the gratifying part of it.
Are organizational skills a paramount part of being a breeder? And if they are, tell me why. And then I also want to know, have you always been organized?
I don't know. My mom might tell you different based on the status of cleanliness of my room. But yeah, I was for the most part a fairly organized person. Could keep track of things fairly well. And it's definitely something that you need as a plant breeder as well. You know, when you're talking about, you know, like me, we're over about 20 different locations, over 100 unique trials that we have named out there, tens of thousands of different varieties that we're keeping track of every year, you know, and then you start going over multiple years as you have varieties that stay in the program. You know, at the end, you can have 10 different years, 40 different in, you know, environments of information on certain varieties. So definitely keeping that organized and keeping track of everything is pretty important in plant breeding.
So it sounds like to be a good plant breeder, you need to be a good juggler.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to the plant breeding job. Like I say, you have things going on in the lab, in the greenhouse, end use quality, out in the field, and just being able to manage all that and keeping track of everything and, you know, being at the right locations at the right time for the diseases that you're interested in. You know, sometimes you wait a week and that disease symptom that was present may be gone a week later. So making sure you're on top of that is pretty important.
If you could have one thing to improve your program, money is no expense, what would it be?
Oh, I guess it would probably be more people. Because as we get more people, then we're able to expand what we can do. So again, you know, if I have more people, I'm able to expand the number of diseases that I can look at, the number of locations I can test in, you know, the number of like these high throughput phenotyping things with drones and that, you know, right now, a lot of it, we're just limited by people being able to go out, you know, take the time to become proficient in these different systems and then take the time to go out and manage all the different locations. So, you know, big picture, yeah, probably more people to be able to implement a lot of this new technology.
You already have a lot of balls in the air, breeding, writing, teaching, and then your committee assignments. Can any man or woman do justice to breeding wheat with all of the other commitments you have, not to mention a family of four and a wife?
You know, I think you can manage it. A lot of it is just looking at the perspective. So, you know, from the family side of it, I have a lot of support from my wife and my family. So, you know, they understand that I'm going to be gone a couple times. But at the same time, I don't let my work get in the way of that either. So if there's a baseball game, you know, I try and be home for it. If there's a swim meet, I try and make it to that. So, you know, there's a good balance, I think, that it's just being focused and being aware of that and planning your day around that. The time I'm at work, I try and be as efficient as possible. So when I get home, there's time for family.
I've talked with other breeders in the past, and they have told me how important it is to be out in the field looking at your wheat. In today's technological age, where you can actually peer inside the wheat and see what's going on, is it really so necessary to be out in the field looking at your wheat?
Yeah, I still think it is, because even though we know a lot, there's still a lot we don't know. And, you know, wheat genetically is a very complex organism. And so, you know, even though I may say, well, you know, this line based on a DNA profile has X, Y, and Z, it might not always manifest out in the field. We've got different environments, you know, drought stress may interact with it. And so there's so many interactions that can go on in the field. I don't think we can ever get away from that. We can make a lot of predictions. We can have a lot of insight into varieties that we think will perform better than others. But getting away from actually looking at that in the field, I don't think we're there yet in wheat or really in a lot of the crops that we're looking at. You know, we still need to see how they're going to interact in the field. It's what this technology allows us to do is get rid of a lot of the varieties that we're fairly confident don't have what it takes to be a new variety. So we really are focusing in on those varieties that are going to be the best out in the field.
You've said in the past that your program has three objectives: increase yield, provide genetic resistance, maintain and increase quality. Which of these is the most important? Which is the hardest? Which is the easiest?
Yeah. Which is the most important? I guess it depends on who you're talking to. Again, it's very hard to say which one is better than another. Increasing yield is always going to be important. That's what drives a lot of the growers' decisions. You know, that's where they see the economics. But then you put that into end-use quality, that's their market. And although they don't directly get paid a premium per se for quality, the market itself demands quality and therefore is paying a premium kind of as a market class, like if we talk about soft white. And so if we see end-use quality drop from the standard and the level that it is now, you know, the growers are going to notice that with less exports. You know, so again, that's important, but in a different way than what yield is. And the same with looking at genetic resistance to diseases, you know, because again, you can spray a fungicide on a variety and protect it against a disease, which costs some money, but you usually make that up in yield potential. But the question is, how does that affect the environment, the sustainability of a system, and fluctuations in the disease? Some years are more severe than others. And so again, it adds this level of stability to the entire system, a little more environmentally friendly, you know, and what price is that compared to 5 bushels? You know, so all three of them are important, but in their own kind of relative terms.
So you've been leading the winter wheat breeding program since 2009. Is the program yours now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, from day one, you know, it was kind of mine in that sense. But, you know, we were still working on a lot of the germplasm and a lot of the germplasm decisions that previous breeders have made. You know, and while that germplasm is still there, we are in the point where I'm looking at the crosses that I decided to make. But of course, that is built upon a lot of the decisions of the past breeders as well. So, you know, they have good germplasm that came up, and even if they didn't make release, they were still good varieties and good breeding lines that we're still using in the program. They incorporated a lot of good traits into that germplasm, so we're building upon that. So again, in the sense of, am I looking at my crosses? Yes. So in that sense, they're kind of mine, but built upon a lot of what previous breeders have done.
So was there a fist-pumping moment when you learned that your variety Otto was the number one planted variety in the state?
Yeah, in my own little calm, laid-back way. You know, it takes a lot for me to get excited and jump up and down and do the fist pumping. But, you know, it's always nice to see, especially something, you know, a variety that you've worked hard on developing and you put a lot of time and effort into that. It's really good to see that the producers are accepting that, you know, they have positive things to say about that. And you can see how it's improved, again, their cropping systems, their economics in their own system. So, you know, whether it's, you know, the number one variety or a variety that really works for certain people, anytime you see a variety that people can use in their system and improve their economic return is going to be beneficial. Again, whether that's 40,000 acres, 240,000 acres of a variety, any variety kind of, you know, gets that fist pumping inside of you. Like, yeah, I got a variety out there that growers are using that's helping them.
Well, it was one thing, for instance, in the 1990s when Clarence Peterson had L-10 and on a lot of acres, but he had no competition. I mean, you have a lot of competition now for your varieties.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of options out there, and not just within WSU, but between the universities, between private companies. So like I say, yeah, it's always good to see varieties that go out there and find their place and, again, can help the producers.
Well, from my perspective, it's a much bigger deal when you're number one, when you have like about 6 competitors.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, if anything, it's kind of this friendly competition, I think. You know, we're all vying to get good varieties out there to the growers. And so if anything, the growers end up winning, right? Because as any company or university releases a variety, that's now the new target. And so I've got to do better than what they just released. And when I release a variety, they have to do better than what I released. And so it's really this kind of friendly competition is all kind of pushing the limits, and everyone's trying to do better than everybody else. So that only releases better varieties.
The Washington Grain Commission contributed $2.4 million for research in the 2017-2018 budget. A majority to WSU faculty with Agricultural Research Service Science is also receiving funding. More than $500,000 of that $2.4 million is attached to projects that Carter is responsible for, including breeding new varieties of soft white, hard red winter, and hard white winter wheat. In the second part of my conversation with Carter, he'll explain how important grower dollars are to his program, talk about what it means to be co-chair of the Orville A. Vogel Endowed Chair in Wheat Research and Genetics, and address the differences between old line breeders and today's young whippersnappers, among other subjects. In other words, if you found the first part of my conversation with Carter fascinating, you won't be disappointed in the sequel, or part two, a conversation with Aaron Carter, WSU winter wheat breeder, right here on Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.